Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Kristen Eccleston, aka the Neurodiverse Teacher. And today with me is my guest, Jordan Bell. Jordan is regularly sought after as an advisor, consultant, speaker, educator, and expert contributor in the areas of digital marketing, technology, automation, and startup management. Jordan is the CEO of Agency Bell, a digital advertising agency that leverages machine learning to build competitive advantages of high-budget digital brands. He has founded and launched several successful companies, consulted or advised startups in numerous industries, and has managed hundreds of millions of dollars in digital campaigns for Fortune-level companies. Jordan was recently featured as a coach and judge on season 4 of The Blocks, a reality competition for entrepreneurs. And Jordan is an expert on advertising, digital agencies, automation, and entrepreneurship. He's a proud husband, father, and an avid musician. Well, welcome, Jordan, to the Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast.
Thanks for having me on.
I am really excited to have you. So I'm going to jump right in. And the first thing I have to say is your resume is incredibly impressive. So I kind of want to know a little bit more about you and how you got to that point. So would you mind telling me and my listeners, who were you when you were younger? Who was younger Jordan? What type of student were you? What did school look like for you?
Yeah, I'm gonna go at it from the angle of as a kind of person who was who got an ADHD diagnosis as an adult. I didn't understand a lot when I was younger about why I operated the way that I did. But I was in sports, music, so it'd be like choir, band, orchestra. So I was like the creative side of it was really great for me, but I did a lot of sports too. And then I was, as a student, I was generally trying to like be like at least a B student. But I definitely experienced that area where like I love math and I love creativity, but then some subjects I would feel that difficulty of like my motivation. I wanted to be a great student, but my motivation on areas that weren't exciting to me was difficult. So I was kind of a weird egg where like even by my senior year, I was like missing as much class. You could get away with this a lot more in the past, but I would miss as much class on topics that I didn't like, even though I would do the homework and I would try to like get a good grade in it. But I would spend my time, like I would go to the auditorium and I would like try to learn something on piano that was usually like too hard for me. Because I would have difficulty like sitting in class and listening to it. And so I wanted to do a lot of things. And my attention was everywhere. And so that was kind of like a very pleasing experience. And then I would get this feeling like, do I really need to be an A student in something? Do I really need to, if wasn't passionate about it, I just wanted to learn enough about it and then spend as much time as I could without getting expelled, just working on things that were of interest to me. I'd be like the only person in the band room in the back, like not like, it wasn't like, you know, going home and playing video games. Like I would just want to go and do something that was like stimulating for my interest or whatever. I still am a video game person, but I always, and that's, this has never changed about me. I've always wanted to do that kind of stuff. So when I got to college, I wanted to use the time effectively. I was in a classical music program, and which was sort of geared towards music industry studies, but it had a classical component. I wanted to learn more classical music. Like learn classically, I guess, to be a better musician. And then I also wanted to, the business side of the music industry studies were enough. So I started their business administration program. So it was a Bachelor of Music and a Bachelor of Science. And this was very, very typical of me. I overloaded my classes. I did like, you know, B's and A's, but I had a couple C's here and there. If I wasn't, I would do something like enough to get through it and get the credit. When I did APs before that, not to jump back, I would do like enough to get credit for like the AP history, the AP like math, but I wouldn't try to get the 5. I just wanted to go to the next thing. So college was the same way. I actually tapped out of my credits. I had to go home and finish some gen eds at a community college because I couldn't get financial aid anymore because they were like, you've taken too many credits. So it was very, I would like be in, actually, one distinct choice that was interesting was I wanted to go as a percussionist. And it was one of the, it was in the Northeast. It was one of the country's better percussion studios. But the people in the studio were practicing 4 hours a day. And I didn't want to do that. I want to do lots of other things. So I had been a theater person and in like a show choir and stuff in high school. So I was like, I'll just do voice because they only practice 30 minutes a day, but you're getting the same, a lot of the same musicality and training. And so the benefits were there. So that was totally up my alley. I was weightlessing a percussion. I just went into voice instead. So I developed a good classical voice training, still got my classical education, which I'm so happy about today. As more of a contemporary like style of interest in musician, having that background is really great. And then I got to do all the hobbies that I wanted to do. I got to like work in the recording studio. I played in clubs. So, and it was fun. I got to be myself. And lastly on that topic, another thing that was very particular about me, like as growing up and like going to college, was I always felt a little different. So I would do things that were like, not for the attention, but because I just wanted to like do something different that was fun. So I would like dye my hair all crazy colors. I would walk through the halls of this classical music school with like camo pants on and looking like I was in a hardcore band when I was in college, or excuse me, when I was in high school. So I'd walk through the halls and people like, who's this effer here? Like, what is he doing? He's like, this is not how we operate, right? And so I constantly had a little bit of that judgment going on there, but I didn't care. I just wanted to do things that made me feel, I guess, I wanted to feel like normal and positive. And my version of normal was being individualistic, but not in a way that like gets in anyone's face. I just wanted to quietly be me and go through life. And that, to me, I didn't think about that before, but to me today, it makes a ton of sense as to why I did that. So it was cool. I mean, that's, and then after, I mean, after, after college, it was finding my way out to California from upstate New York, working a little in the music industry, finding my way through digital marketing passions, and then finding the combination of creative and data analytical, a lot of pattern recognition in my work. And so I just found the lanes that I really wanted to operate in. And then I just hit the gas. And that's kind of where I didn't really know where I was going. But when something felt right, I wanted to pursue it, like just authentically. And after a while, it was cool because I started developing a background and a resume of a lot of different things. But, you know, to be honest, where I'm going, a lot of people have a vision of where they're going. I have ideas, but I also know that it could absolutely change. And so if you were to ask me where exactly you're going, I don't fully know yet. But what I do know is that there's so many great things to do and that I'm interested in. So I'm not worried about options, you know, recession or not. So I guess probably that takes us up to the current present.
No, I love it. And you know, it strikes me that you are first I have to say, you and I had very similar backgrounds in high school. I was that theater chorus person. That is even how I just got into college because I was not a school fan and I sang and that is all I wanted to do. And then somehow I still ended up in education. So very similar. We'll have to compare notes there because it sounds like you and I had very similar experiences. But what I'm hearing you say and something I really want to point out is it sounds like you're a multi-passionate individual. Like you were okay with saying that I have many things that I'm interested in and I'm not going to essentially hold myself to have to just focus on this one area when I can really be successful in multiple different areas. Because I think that's a message. Do you feel like that's a message a lot of young kids get? It's like, pick a thing and go after that thing. And you're almost kind of deemed as being scattered if you have multiple areas that you're passionate in.
Definitely. I don't want to make overgeneralize and make societal statements, but what I've felt is going through is that a lot of discipline in staying on one thing or a couple things, and there's a lot of ideas that we're taught, like what is a respectable career, right? What does that mean, right? The old like doctor, lawyer kind of thing. Like I did a year of law school, right? So like I thought I wanted to like do that more and it was not for me, right? Mm-hmm. But I come from the ideology today of if it's a economically or career viable option and you pursue it the passionately the way that you want to at the level you want to, the results are somewhat predictable in the sense of like, if I really loved being an artist, well, there are pathways for that. Right. And I think that growing up, I think, especially I grew up in a smaller town, and I think that most of my peers, if I were to maybe somewhat generalize, I think I could do this on this topic, is the awareness of what you can do in the world, especially like mm-hmm. long time before COVID, when most people weren't leaving town, right? And there's a mm-hmm. scope of what you can do. This is predefined idea of what your options are. So in order to do it right, you've got to like focus on that. Well, science tells us that if we don't figure out how to find the things that make us come alive, then we have to work significantly harder at them. And there's an argument to be made about how in those environments, if that's what we want yet, is that the discipline we need to be effective enough to have a respectable career, right? Like different cultures and parts of the country and the world have different, like, what is respectable? How do you honor your family? How do you be successful in the world? How do you be safe and like, you know, find your way? There's all these like ideas. We're coming out of that generation where there was a very limited range of it. Well, now during COVID, of course, especially for younger people who are, you could do anything. If you figure it out and work at it and like be strategic about it, you can be a TikTok star like today until that's no longer a thing, and or put YouTube content out there and make money at it. There's systems and funnels that teach people how to do this. So I guess that's the that limiting view. Last thing on this one actually is I had a dear friend and colleague when I first came out to Los Angeles, which was say around 2009. And we had different mm-hmm. ideas about what it was like to be interested in a lot of different things. I didn't want to stay in one spot long enough on a specific thing. I wanted to sample a lot of different types of disciplines if I was interested in it, because I knew that I would learn it faster. You get to that diminishing return sometimes of where you slow down. And now it's like that 80-20 rule. Like the last 10 to 20% could be such a large amount of time to really become an expert at it. And the question is, should you, right? Like mm-hmm. it depends on where it's all about. If you want to be a brain surgeon, absolutely, right? Don't skip out on some of those lessons. Right. But if you want to be a generalist, right, and have mm-hmm. a lot of different areas, there's a point of diminishing returns where it can make sense. And this was our argument. As I would say, she'd be like, you should really, really focus on getting great at this. And I'm like, but what if that's not for me? What if I want to do a lot of different things? I want to learn just enough to be dangerous or to be effective or to be mm-hmm. functional. And then I want to move on to the next thing. And that's just the way my brain was working. So I don't think it's for everybody, that approach. Mm-hmm. But for the person who's constantly wanting to try new things, there is a strategic way to learn faster and mm-hmm. and not feel overwhelmed or feel that anxiety of needing to stay in the spot. And that's especially young people, I think, can have a lot of difficulty knowing how to develop that confidence of knowing when to listen to that you need to be disciplined approach versus I want to explore. And does this fit mm-hmm. into my path in life? Those are confusing questions to answer as growing up.
Oh yeah, they are, especially at 18 when you're trying to be told, like, figure out what you're doing for the rest of your life. Now, yeah. Let me ask you, as an entrepreneur, do you find the fact that you have had multiple experiences in different types of, you know, work fields, that it actually has benefited you in the sense that you have a lot of knowledge from different areas, and it almost makes you a stronger entrepreneur, makes you a stronger person in general, because you have so many different areas of background knowledge?
Yes. There's an advantage and a bit of a curse in where my expectations of building a team. So because I was moving from place to place and in discipline to discipline, and I got relatively good at figuring out like what was adjacent and what would also be helpful to know. And so I, as a consultant, was incredibly effective. I could drop into almost most kinds of environments, and as an individual, be able to help companies and any kind of like organizations or groups go forward quickly, because I was able to adapt to the environment. I was great at pattern recognition, right? And so able to figure out not just like what I could do, but I could also discover the gaps of my own knowledge that I need to fill in and how much I would just want to know so that I could get to the next step. And helping others as an individual is that is great that way. As a team leader and trying to build a team, it's incredibly difficult. And I would say that probably the greatest struggle was over the last few years. So I mentioned before, I'm in the early stages of discovery and working to see where and if I fall on the autism spectrum. And so this is actually a relatively new thing. I'm still working with a private doctor to figure that out. I did a lot of the testing. So one of the things that I really think a lot about now is understanding ourselves and where our superpowers and kryptonite are is very important. But as I was building my company, especially during COVID, we had a lot of turnover. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that that I don't need to get into, like regarding work expectations, people who work two jobs, but when they say they only work one, I ran into some of those challenges and didn't realize it until we were like far behind on projects. But when it came to building a team, what I didn't fully appreciate was this baseline understanding that my brain and how I think and operate and see the world is different than most people that I would hire. And that has been a very interesting journey. It's not, and I want to be very clear about this one. Like I see these things as different, not better, not worse. I think that more often, the super ego part of our psychology, right? More often, the part that like is self-critical is a bigger voice than any feeling of like, oh, I'm better, or I do better. I operate differently, and that leads me to wanting to learn as much as possible, which is really good for high performing individuals. But it can become chaotic and like a small version of hell when you don't understand that and you're trying to build a team around you, because the systems and the things that motivate and the operational systems that help you grow the company in the way that most companies operate, I can't use the same rules that work for me. I have to be able to recognize what work for others and team up with managers or executives who can help me to sew those things more effectively. Not because I'm not capable, but because it's not second nature sometimes. And that was an incredibly difficult mountain of discovery that I had to go through, and I'm still developing that on, right? People operate differently, so we have to approach them differently, everyone differently. We have to see different learning styles. Last on this one, I would say is I did a strengths finder recently, and I like these things like Enneagram, strengths finders, Myers-Briggs, anything that helps me understand better, more about myself in a way that so that I can operate in team environments, lead teams, work with other companies, clients more effectively. I love that stuff, right? And one of the things that stood out was I was very inventive. I was constantly thinking about the future, wanting to innovate, being very opportunistic. But some of the kryptonite in such a strong mix there, or such a strong element there as an entrepreneur, is that tendency for teams to feel left behind, for people to not know what to do next, for not having a clear enough game plan. When I think about individual performance and my confidence to be dropped into any room, Fortune 500, in the middle of a legal department or operations or marketing or creative, I know I can walk into a room and make an impact because I intend to, not because I feel like special or superior. It's because I intend to make an impact, and I look for the opportunities almost obsessively and study the different ways of how businesses worked, did my MBA, stuff like that. Not that you have to do those, but those are my chosen paths allowed me to feel effective. But on the side of organizational development and scaling companies, there's a significant challenge. And I think that if I were to wrap this into a big takeaway, it's that the better we understand those things, the earlier on, whether we're growing up, teenagers, students going to college, early careers, the better that we can understand that in this world and actually make peace with it, not feel like there's something wrong with us, not expect the world to understand, because the world's not going to understand you, right? Like it's not the right way to see it. But knowing how to approach the world becomes a massive superpower for those who feel like their kryptonite is weighing them down. And that's that for me is like, even just to recently, has been like my like internalizing and really beginning to make sense of all that. And that's the big lesson that I'm retraining myself on now.
I love that. Well, let me ask you, in addition to that big lesson, as somebody who is multi-passionate, who is constantly wanting to learn, is constantly taking on new challenges, which is very common with people who are ADHD, but it's also very common with people ADHD to kind of hit that burnout sometimes too, because we want to learn so much, because we're constantly taking on more. And sometimes we don't even realize it's burnout or it's stress until we hit that wall. Yeah. Is that something you've ever had to experience, struggle with? And if so, what do you do now to kind of make sure that you don't hit to that point?
A lot, way more. I mean, I hit the 80-hour, 90-hour work weeks during COVID. I have a 2-year-old son, you know, and like the balance, we were both working from home, right? My wife transitioned out of an advertising sales career, pursuing being an actor right now. And so our agreement has been around, like, I'm going to keep running the business aside. She worked with me on it a little bit as she pursues the next version. But the balance with family, first off, having children is like the catalyst for things that you haven't figured out yet are going to come straight to the surface and punish you until you figure it out. Right. And it's good. Mm-hmm. It's the most, I love being a parent. I'm constantly like, I want to consistently be a better father and be more there. But one of the elements of the burnout, right, for me was wanting to do so many things. But like I said before, like needing to build and structure the team and make sure that there's always alignment, always like we're always on the similar path. There's the right project management support, that going so fast but being able to effectively lead and making sure we have the right support systems, operations, the right tracking in place, especially in a remote environment where I'm not in person with it. Some people I work with never met in person. And we just, you know, do video and stuff. So the constant interest, especially starting something but not finishing it, and then it's still being out there. Like, I can have a messy desk and not like in a room and that be okay. I sequester myself to like the corner office, but try to keep the rest of the house, because I'm not the only one who lives here, but try to keep the rest of the house good. But starting so many things and then staying organized and getting to a place where you can delegate it, or I can delegate it, pass it off, or just finish it, can be such a difficult exercise. And eventually that queue gets so large and it's easy to start getting disorganized. So those type of like those executive functional skills that we call like the executive function skills, right? Like not like the, I'm an executive of a company, but just those kinds of organizational skills. I have some superpowers and kryptonite there as well. And especially when someone depends on me. And so what happens is I forget things, but I don't mean to forget them, but somebody else was counting on me, right? Like in family or work and stuff. And then I feel embarrassed. I feel badly about it. I hyper-focus on it, right? The hyper-focusing for me is difficult sometimes, staying prioritized. And then when things need to happen, I'm in client services. So as an agency, so if I don't meet my promises and the promises that we made, that's very heavy. I take that hard, really, really hard. And so the biggest challenge at that point was learning how to walk back the promises, not be what we call, like I have a personal executive coach, and let's say not being overpromised in so many areas in life, learning how to slow down and plan a little bit further ahead and know to say, I don't need to do this right now, which can be so difficult. Like, I want to do this now. I'm going to like go through everything. And then all of a sudden, 10 other things that should have been done at that point or would have made life easier later weren't done. And then you're backed up against deadlines, times, expectations. You know, like I protect my time, like bath time with son and hanging out with wife and stuff and all that. Like protecting family time was a key step. But guess what? Work doesn't stop. So that becomes the fast punishment for not getting that together. Now I'm operating at a level where there's often not a lot of room for some of like the big mistakes there. And I set high expectations that are sometimes unreasonable for myself and backing those up. So I don't think that life has to be chaos, but I think that the pursuit of so many passionate things and goals, if not careful, is a burnout trap. And I was like, intimately involved with burnout my relationship mm-hmm. with that topic was very unhealthy.
Yeah. I suffer from the same thing. I'm very much that person who's like, oh, I don't have anything to do for 20 minutes. Let me start this new life adventure right now. That is going to, you know, maybe I have time in this moment, but not necessarily for the level that I'm taking on. And I also think mm-hmm. that everything only takes me 5 minutes to complete. No. So if you ask me, hey, can you do this? Oh, yeah, I can totally get this done for you today. Because I, in my mind, it takes 5 minutes to do, not actually the 2 hours, because my hyperfixation time only feels like 5 minutes and reality 2 hours go by. Yeah. So yes,
estimating time, right? I struggle with that too. It's hard.
It is hard. I mean, time blindness is a real thing, but yeah, everything only takes five minutes for me. So I think it's empowering when you hear from other people that, okay, it's not just me. And so have you had to come up with any kind of creative ways to that help you? I mean, you're wildly successful as an entrepreneur. You're passionate. So what do you have to do that might be different because it works for you, for your brain? I think you've shared that, you know, sometimes then when you're working with people, you're not always aligned with them because your brain works differently. And I agree with you. When I talk about neurodiversity and neurotypical, I don't think one is better than the other. To me, they are both on the same playing field. It's just a matter of my brain processes and sees the world this way. Your brain processes, that way, right? Not one is better than the other, but there are challenges when your brains are not on the same page with one another. So how do you overcome some of those challenges when you're working with people?
Yeah. This was a difficult lesson to learn and I think that I finally have like made a declaration for myself that I've like, okay, now I've accepted that the culmination of difficult experiences have led me to this lesson, perhaps like just more recently. And that is, I need to make my own systems to function mm-hmm. properly. If I buy into other systems and they are not, they don't naturally become, are enough of a fit, I get overwhelmed. Not like I can fit into a lot of different environments, but if it's a system in which that something important to me in life, a goal set out, is dependent on it going well, then mm-hmm. fitting into another system where a person may not have as clear of an understanding, not like I said, not that that's their job to, is a risk for me. So mm-hmm. as a great example of that would be, so when I started law school, I did an online program because we worked with the legal industry for the last couple of years and as like a niching down for a little while. And so I thought I wanted to be more strategically involved, be a strategic partner. So I wanted to go to law school for a little bit, but I, for a little bit, right? Like it's just a little like, you know, hobby for a while.
Weekend away.
five minutes, right? Just 5 minutes. Right? people are like, you're crazy. I'm like, oh, it just seems normal. Right. Obviously it is. It's a huge commitment. But what I discovered was that I was probably like overly judgmental about this, but I was hardcore judgmental and not happy with the online experience in that education system, like things that were mislabeled, things that were not like intuitive defined, you know, professors that were like kind of making you feel stupid for like not like spending hours to learn their system and figure it out. Well, to be honest, the whole online education, industry, so much of it is so far behind. They don't base it off the real science of learning. Law school in general, by the way, is so backwards in terms of what you're learning and how you're learning versus what you need to do to actually pass the bar and become an effective practicing attorney. So I discovered that relatively quickly. And so going through that system was difficult. Also, you have to sit through lectures. Now, sitting still for 2 hours and needing to get all the way through it, I'm like, this is nowhere near. I had professors who were like going off on tangents about like how their cat would like walk behind them and like knock, you know, like, oh, the label of, I can't see the peanut butter on my shelf because my cat knocked off. I'm like, no, I can't sit through this. So mm-hmm. so it was a very anxiety inducing process for me. And all I wanted to do was be able to figure out how to get access to the things I needed to learn the way I wanted to learn. And that was one of the hardest examples for me. That plus working with like executives or coaches on how to build operational systems in the company that I needed to. They'll be like, hey, we need systems that are like your dashboard, your control center. And when I realized that I was giving that power to other people, I would decide I wasn't a good project manager. I was putting that thought in my head, right? But really, like for myself, I am probably the best project manager for my own needs as an executive, as a person, because anyone else who builds it, I don't care how experienced they are. Honestly, they're not going to build something that works for me as well as I can, even though, to be honest, I'm still going through that process. I'm still iterating on what's going to work, because it's not fair to expect someone to understand how a different brain operates when it is neurodiverse, right? I probably am not qualified. You know, if I studied this deeply, this whole area deeply, I would not be qualified. I don't think, anyway, in my opinion, to build organizational processes for another person who has their own unique form of neurodiversity, because I think that there are trends, but there are so many different versions. It's not a cookie cutter type of thing. And so that was such a powerful lesson to say, I wanted to learn how to avoid getting into systems that I didn't have control over my experience, or enough where I was giving away control of my experience. If I was highly dependent on it going well, and if I didn't have a lot of room, I mean, parent, business owner, and going to law school, I had no room for error, really no room for error. And that, like good work-life balance, happy marriage, trying to be a present father, right? Like the most important, being in good health, trying to sleep enough. I had no room for error, but I was failing at it hard. I was like barely passing, even though I had the capacity, the capacity to do well. That was a punishing, but an also empowering lesson at the end of the day. And now it was a good year, right? Because now I can process that and go forward in life with that understanding and the discovery of, and the pursuit of learning. If I fall more specifically on the spectrum and in how so, is going to help to illuminate that further. And I have to put attention into that to be successful the way I want to.
No, I love that. And I think it's so great because it sounds like you take some of your own personal life experiences and you're really applying that into how you're now kind of restructuring your life, which I think happens to a lot of us who are neurodiverse, especially. I had the same thing happen to me where it's kind of like you learn the lessons the hard way. But yeah. You definitely learn them the hard way. But then the struggle is trying to make sure that you're honoring those lessons, because I still struggle with that. And I don't know if you do, if you still struggle to a degree. It's like, yes, I learned this lesson. I know it. I learned it the hard way. But you're still having to honor it, because it's almost like your natural inclination is to still take on all the things and still do the things that the way that you've done it. And now it's almost like one more thing that you have to work really hard to make sure that you're honoring that lesson. I don't know about, do you feel like you run into that? Because that's definitely me.
Yeah, constantly. I don't really know if that journey is going to end, you know, like
I don't think it does.
So I've got a good example there. So I have like a list. I'm doing little things now and testing it out. Like I have like a list of topics of things that I want to talk about, right? So if I am like done with work and I come out back into the world, I open my office, I come back in, and then we're taking care of our son Jackson. I will want to tell my wife Victoria about all of the things in my head, right? And I just want to be like, oh, this and this and this and this and this and this and this. And she doesn't want to hear that, right? Like she's interested. But it's overwhelming, right? Like it's so learning about like the idea that, hey, people want to hear about things, but they don't want the highly technical laundry list of all of every single thing you experienced. And I, out of love, want to share. So figuring out, so little things like that. I mean, there's 100 little examples of things like that where, so I make a list of topics and go, okay, I start to organize. I still have like the digital sticky notes ever. And so I'm constantly consolidating. So eventually that will become easier and easier. I have little things where like I send a link to myself on Slack and it like puts it, it automates and puts it into a list somewhere. And eventually if it's important enough, I will organize it. But working away from everything becomes focusing on trying to consolidate, focusing on the right things, keeping things available so I know where to find them, But that exercise is a constant development. And the better I get at that, the more I find that I have those forms of success. Like I have more time to do vision planning. I have more time at that point where I'm getting more time. I have more time with family. I feel less overwhelmed. And I understand better that one, not everybody needs to hear everything in my head that's at the moment that it's happening, right? That's confusing and experience for everybody. I also don't need to take everything, care of everything at once. And so, but building my systems of how I'm going to get to those spots and I'm going to have the urge, right? Like you said. Mm-hmm. So what makes it so that I don't have the urge? Well, there might need to be a process where I stop and I go, when do I need to do this? Is there a deadline mm-hmm. for this? Does this in reprioritizing those things and going back to it? At first, I always thought that organizing lists and information felt like a waste of time. I didn't want to do it. I just want to fly through life at 90 miles an hour and just do whatever I want mm-hmm. to do. Coming back around to the idea that I actually need to be tactical about it and is why building systems now, little pattern systems like my to-do list, just getting things that I'm not going to lose a sheet of paper, but it's going to be on one list that I know I can go back to. One, if I could throw out a tech thing, Airtable has been a lifesaver for me because it's a relational database. I can connect things. I don't have to have the same thing written in multiple places. And I begin to have my list and I know I label them and I know how to get to them if I need them. Those kinds of tools, whether it's a tool, a technology, a process, an assistant, something, you know, for those who have the ability to, right? I'm fortunate that our company is large enough that I have the ability to have an assistant. But still, it's all about not listening to like, oh, this is the way you have to organize. The person wrote a blog and said, the best way to organize in this. I'm like, no, there's no best way. The best way is the way that makes you feel less chaotic and makes you feel like you know how to find the things that you want. Even if it's like in a pile in the corner, metaphorically or literally, but if you know how to find it and it's not in the way of anyone else and you have your systems that way, I find my way back to a place where I'm not overwhelmed. And even though I know that there are things there, I know when I can get to them and I know that I will be able to get to them. And that is where even like today, the feelings that I have about that overwhelm, I have it every single day, those feelings that anxiety comes in. And it's just saying, what can I control and what can I move forward on today, my own systems? With that, when those things are going well, when I can get a little bit of the next step there, life gets easier again. It really does.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm going to ask you a question then that I find to be the hardest question when I'm asked this, even though it seems like a very simple question. What do you do for self-care? And it's time for you to take care of yourself. No, I mean, as somebody who's ADHD, I have a really hard time answering that question. And I usually think I have it under control until somebody asks me that question. So that's why I'm asking you, what do you do for self-care?
I could go like a week and then go, ooh, I stink. I need to take a shower. If I get interested in something and I don't leave enough time for it, I will sleep 2 or 3 hours a night and feel burned out the next day. Focusing on sleep, good nutrition, mental health, the things like I love, like I'll go to the piano, right? And I'm like learning more and more today and getting better at it. And just playing popular music and feeling like I know around the court, like doing the things that are therapeutic. People will say like, oh, you got to get up in the morning and meditate, or you need to, not everything works the same for everybody. But finding the things that bring mental health. The last few nights were I went into a pattern of much slower sleep. And so I was out of that for a while. I was sleeping more for a while. So I want to be very, I have to be very intentional about it because it's very easy to slip into that mode. Luckily I have a good relationship with my wife where she could be like, you kind of stink a little bit. Right. And that's okay. Like we're, you know,
I get that from my husband too. I get the, when was the last time you showered conversation? I get that too. It's an ADHD thing.
Isn't it wonderful when our partners are like, it's like the hey, you kind of stink, but I like it in a way, kind
yeah.
of. But then if it's like too long, yeah. okay, hey, I love you. Go take care of that, right? Go shower.
So
those all of those kinds of self-care are. Oh, actually, one more is one that was an effective system was getting onto a meal delivery plan. That so I use I think it's Trifecta. Finding one that wasn't loaded with sodium, that was still balanced, that kind of met without feeling like this is the microwave meal that you can't have mm-hmm. You can't do this for 10 years because you'll develop, you know, your body will punish you. But mm-hmm. finding things that mean that all of the little moments that I don't want to do, I don't want to cook my food. I don't want to do it.
Yeah.
And so yep. I can create value in my company significantly more than, and I don't get pleasure from making food. So I just want it delivered, right? I do want to cook food and prepare it with my family for the loving benefit of that. But outside of that, left to my own devices, I would rip the top, eat it, and then just keep going. I don't stop and have a lunch break, but we have to be nutritious. We have to take care of our nutrition, especially as, you know, I'm in my like mid to late 30s. So I have to care for this more and more as I get older. Sleeping very important because it does. It affects our mood. It affects my ability to lead. It affects my ability to think. So when it goes over the line, because it will, I will go through periods of where I need to go, oh crap, I got to bring that back. And it is a much more intentional exercise. So, and those have to be systems. Like I have to plan effectively and cut out the meetings I don't need to be in to make room because if I don't, I'm going to be up against a deadline and I'm going to choose the deadline over sleep. And that is a vicious cycle that I have to protect my own balls against that.
No, I completely understand. I almost felt like you were describing me in the conversation. And I think those are real struggles that people with ADHD have. I mean, I am the same way. Most of the time, you know, I end the day and I'm like, wow, my head really hurts. And it's like, oh, I didn't drink any water or go to the bathroom or eat anything.
Maybe that's why.
Right. So no, yeah. I completely understand. So we're getting close to the end here. So I have two questions left that I do want to ask you. And that first one is, if anybody wanted to learn more about you, what you do, wanted to connect with you, what would be the best way for them to go about doing that?
I haven't, they can find me on LinkedIn. I'll give my email, jordan@agencybell.com. And then I don't have my personal site up yet, but LinkedIn, I guess professionally is a good way to do it. I haven't done a lot with it, but a public Instagram, Agency Jordan is the handle there. No punctuation or anything. I'm going to be putting more on there soon. So I guess it's kind of like professional executive sort of level, but if people have questions mm-hmm. or they can always email me and I always love to talk about this stuff. I was like, especially when I got into like the ASD stuff, I started like looking around to see like, are there groups, communities that would make sense? I didn't find the ones that kind of like fit the way that I wanted to approach it. But I was finding like on Reddit, like I was noticing that people were talking about experiences as like, especially if they're an entrepreneur or especially if they're like pursuing a craft passionately. And so I find that, mm-hmm. I found that those topics were helpful to me and I wanted people to be able to, I wanted to like connect with people on that topic. So if someone emailed me and asked me a question about like that, I'm sure I would want to answer and talk about it. So, and then try not to hyperfixate on that conversation, but it's right. cool. I know it's confusing and a lot of time goes by and it's so confusing to figure it all out. So I'm happy to share if someone has a burning question.
Wonderful. Well, my last question for you that I like to ask all my guests who come on the show is if you could give any advice to youth, young adults who are struggling academically, social, emotionally, what advice would you give to them?
Oh, yeah. I wrote a few points down so I wouldn't trail off onto topics. First off, I think one of the biggest lessons that I had to learn, and this was going through my victim mentality stage two when I was really struggling, was my personal opinion, I don't think it's the world's job to understand you. And I think that can be difficult because you're like, why don't people understand me? Why do they judge me? And that's a hard process to go through. So when I made peace with the fact that the world probably wasn't going to understand me and like everyone around me, and I began to take ownership of the fact of, okay, it doesn't feel fair, but then again, I don't take enough time to understand others sometimes. And so, what can I do about it? And then it became about learning about myself. So mm-hmm. I love like good quality, like well-known personality assessments, like Enneagrams, Myers-Briggs, StrengthsFinder by Gallup. I love recently, things like that helped me to make more sense of being, because there's elements of there that cross into like there are characteristics that don't identify neurodiversity, but there are probably, mm-hmm. there are a lot of trends there. And so that helped me to settle into my, okay, there are so many ways of being different and make peace with that. Then I also don't set the expectations on others. If you cannot expect others to try to cater to something that is special and different, but isn't like the same, like no program no online education program is going to make a path for me. It's a side topic of an education brand I want to build. But that said, is make your own systems. And like, rather than focusing on like the difficulty that is going to be there in life, which sucks, especially because there's stigmas around, like the words have stigmas around them that are unfair. Mm-hmm. And there's so many different versions of these, but learning how to say, okay, that energy is easy to get negative because I've gotten negative so much about it, is say, now instead, I'm just going to figure out what works. And I know it's not going to bother other people, but I'm going to feel like I'm going to feel less deficient, and I will be able to feel really good about my strengths, and I'll be able to make peace with the things that I struggle with. Get that super ego out without judging yourself constantly, especially when you get to the overwhelm, especially when you get lost and confused and like don't, and just like too many things going on. So, cause that paralyzing, getting away from that paralyzing feeling, but saying I have time for this. I have time for myself. I go at my own pace. I just need to figure out what works for me. And life, I feel, starts to feel, it gets less confusing. I start feeling like I need to rely on others. And then the negativity that can come with misunderstanding each other starts mm-hmm. to go away a little bit more. And then there's also, you know, like things that I have with social anxiety and other things like that. Like it's just all of those things start, I think, with understanding yourself better and then finding your pathways to that. That ultimately contribute to your own ability to navigate life in a way that is pleasing, but also helps you function well in a world that doesn't fully understand or what we'll call cater, I guess, or design experiences that are easier for you, especially if they're experiences that you have to go through, like you have to take standardized tests. You have to turn in your homework a certain way. So those aren't going to, like, you know, you have to feed yourself, right? You have to sleep. Those aren't going away. So the ownership that comes, it starts from understanding. And then, you know, my last part about this is that, like, look, I've had my days as an executive at a company feeling accomplished, the resume you talked about, where I was sobbing when my wife came back because I was like, I am messed up. The world doesn't understand me and I'm the problem. And that is so heavy sometimes. So I think everybody deals with it to an extent. So coming back, it's okay to feel difficult about it. Just when you come back to it, realize that the same tactics of understanding, appreciating yourself, building your systems, and making it so you can navigate life without feeling like you're broken and there's something wrong with you, especially when the world is not going to like always go like, oh, I see you. Right. To me, I have so much work to do here, but on the other side, but beginning to get to the other side of these stages is where life is starting to feel manageable and I'm feeling confident again. And so I don't know if this is a later in life version of it, but I think that there's elements of this for people who are younger to maybe make sense of it more and find some peace a lot earlier. Took me a lot longer, but I'm sure that I hope that others can get there a lot quicker.
No, absolutely. That was beautiful advice. And I could not agree more with what you said. So Jordan, thank you so much for taking your time and being on the show today. I truly appreciate it. And I want to thank all my listeners and thank you for joining in. And we will check you out next week on the Neurodiverse Teacher Podcast. Bye, y'all.
Thank you.